All right, ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Eli James here. This is Eurofolk Radio, and this is another interview with Barbara Ann Novak regarding her book, The 1,000 Years Together, Fearlessly White and Too Many Years with the Jews. Back to you. All right. Okay.
It
Over to you.
seems like millenniums.
Yeah, right. It is. 6,000 millennium. Yeah. Okay.
Right. How's everything with you? How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, I've
Good.
been under the weather, but I'm recovering again. Yeah, so hopefully things
Well, the
will
weather is changing. With I never had allergies or anything like that in Chicago. We just didn't have allergies. And then here with the trees and everything, you know, and all the grass and all that, there's a lot of, and I think that kind of affects me too a little bit. I still go out for my walks and stuff.
Yeah, breathing all that pollen. All right. Okay, Barbara. Yeah, what's on the agenda
All
for
right.
today?
All right, so I'm going to, let's see, I need to do one thing. I need to move that because I can't read. There's like a, like your picture is over what I'm reading, okay? I scan this on my printer. All right, we're going to talk about something that Jerry McDermott wrote and others. And the one thing is, we need to get this information out. We need to spread it however that we can, because it is a crisis, especially for all of Christianity. You know what I mean? And Jesus Christ. You know, that I don't want them to have a religion that, well, we don't need Jesus Christ anymore. You know what I mean? And moreover, I wanted to talk about that the Jews killed Jesus, not the Romans, and killed because we hear like about 20,000 murders every year between video games and news and books and thinking about and other people's thoughts and everything. We hear so much about the word. So kill means like nothing in this country, but they not only, the Jews not only killed Jesus, but they tortured him.
Wow.
And we went over that a little bit, how much they threatened him before, you know what I mean? But this is going to be about the physical effects of the scourging and crucifixion of Jesus. And this was all to the delight of the Jewish Pharisees. In fact, I have a painting, I'll bring this up also later. It's Jesus is on the cross here, our Lord and Savior. And behind him, you know, usually you see like, you could see, you know, Israel in the back or Jerusalem in the back or whatever. But behind him, you not only have that, but you have all these Pharisees behind him. And that's really, really touching, that really effective. All right, here goes. And I have a painting here with Jesus on the cross. As you know, I'm an artist, so I study it, and we've gone over these things before, but what you can see is like his where he's got the nails in his hands and in his on his 2 feet and his ribs and everything. He's looking up to God like, my God, you know, this kind of torture is just and they went over the brink. The Jews must have paid off the soldiers or whatever to really, you know, do him in.
Sure.
So this is by Peter Paul Rubens around the year 1640. Much has been written about the physical and psychological effects of the crucifixion of Jesus, often by surgeons, psychiatrists, and other doctors. While well-intentioned, the writings have been largely inaccurate by forensic standards, and until now have relied on educated speculation and outdated medical and other investigative equipment. The most famous work is the book, quote, A Doctor at Calvary, written by Pierre Barbet, MD. His work has been widely quoted and generally held to be the benchmark study. Well, in 1888, Frederick T. Zugabe, MD, PhD, wrote his first book on the crucifixion, The Cross and the Shroud. And when they mention the word shroud, they take for granted that everybody knows. But in case you don't, it's the Shroud of Turin, where after the Jews crucified Jesus, he was wrapped in a cloth, like a blanket or something, a fabric, like a cottony fabric. And not cottony, I think it's, do you know what the Shroud of
It was
Turin was
probably
made
linen.
of?
It was probably linen that was the most common fabric.
Linen. Okay, linen. And it not only like covered him, it actually wrapped around him. All right, since then, this Dr. Zugabe has conducted more extensive experiments using the latest forensic methods. At the same time, the amount of research conducted by others into Jesus's crucifixion has increased, and there is now a large body of up-to-date findings from which to draw. Dr. Zugabe is an expert in forensic pathology and was the chief medical officer of Rockwood County, New York, from 1969 to 2003. He is an adjunct associate professor at Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. For the past 20 years, he has been the president of the Association of Scientists and Scholars International for the Shroud of Turin. So anyways, I found a YouTube about the Shroud of Turin that was, it was modern, and it shows more often, it's people are really starting to get very excited about it, that this really was Jesus's. And it's, let's see, it's called, quote, "Shocking evidence that proves the Shroud of Turin shows the actual face of Jesus, more than the face even, but the different parts, you know, of the body."
Right.
But when I'm watching the YouTube, this, I'll tell you, this is not happiness and joy. On the right side of my screen was a black guy. Well, he's got no problems. He's been pampered for 370 years. He talks away like a storm and everything, expressive and everything, how you're supposed to be. Well, I don't want to watch black. I don't want to. I changed that from 1997. So I'm covering him up, trying to. And I didn't realize it. I thought, well, if I just don't look and look at the other guy. Now, the other guy was white like you, Pastor Eli. And the only thing is, he was all in black.
Okay.
So I'm going like this, covering up the black guy. I'm going over the white guy who is all in black. And all I'm seeing is his head.
So, all right. Okay.
You can't be, you know, I've made up my mind. There has to be at least one person, one woman that makes a stand. You know, I do not want any part of the other races, and I don't want to go hating them. I have to cut them out of my life. So, but the information was good. All right. His interest in the forensic analysis, we're going back to Zugabe. His interest in the forensic analysis of Jesus's crucifixion began in 1948 when, as an undergraduate student of biology, he was critical of an article that appeared in the Catholic Medical Guardian. And I'm not going against Catholics or anybody else. I'm not singling out any other church because we all need to get along. But anyways, the article, "The Physical Cause of the Death of Our Lord" by J.R. Whitaker, launched his lifelong study of the scientific and medical aspects of Jesus's death. Quote, "Forensic pathology, which requires many years of specialized education, training, and experience, is the medical specialty that deals with the mechanism and cause of suffering." So this is what we're going to concentrate on. And I don't really keep a lot of suffering and illness in my mind. But so this has a reason behind it, okay? So a cause of suffering and death due to violence, Jewish violence, such as their crucifixion. I'll add you. "The forensic pathologist is a medical sleuth, an expert in reconstruction whose court testimony must possess a high degree of medical certainty. Indeed, his testimony may help to free an innocent defendant or release a killer back into the community. A study of Jesus' crucifixion begins in the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus prayed after the Last Supper. And I'll mention here, I said this before also, but when I was growing up autobiographically in our kitchen, we had our empty refrigerator here, and there was a wall here, and above us was Jesus in the Garden of Agony. I'll never forget that picture.
All right, Garden of Gethsemane, you said agony, the Garden of Agony. The
well,
agony
they
didn't
actually,
start yet.
They actually called it both, yeah.
Oh,
but
they
you're
did.
Right, it's Garden of Gethsemane.
Okay.
I was thinking maybe of our family's agony, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Anyways, begins in the Garden of Gethsemane where Jesus prayed after the Last Supper. Remember that term now. They had their meal, and it was the Last Supper. Jesus served it because the other ones didn't want to. They thought they were high and mighty. And he had a lot to contend with, even with his followers not understanding him. But we've had 2,000 years for our minds and hearts to develop, you know, not just because they were getting it all in 3 years. All right. Then we follow Jesus as he is scourged at the hands of the Jews who had already beat Jesus bloody and at the hands of the Roman soldiers. And he was made to stagger in the heat through the streets of Calvary. We then examine the effects of being nailed to and suspended on a cross until death. Regardless of the controversy surrounding the authenticity of the Shroud of Turin, it contains a wealth of information and must be included in a study of the crucifixion. And Jews did not suffer, even if it were true, which is not, what the Nazis supposedly did and tortured them and all that. No, the only torture that went on is when they hung 12 white Christian leaders in after the World War II. That was the torture. Whatever happened to them, the typhus, they injected their own. I was told by somebody in Poland that runs one of the camps. And the let's see, they injected their own. And anyway, all right, so I have another painting here. It's Jesus is in the Garden of Agony. I always call it the Garden of Agony.
Okay.
I do. But anyway.
It sounds
Carl,
more impressive.
Okay. I guess that's what our family called it. I don't know.
All right. Yeah.
I see Gethsemane, the Bible.
I'm in the Garden of Agony every day.
Right,
all right,
right.
Please continue. All right. Chicago.
Right, it's
Garden of Agony. Right. Okay.
It's by Carl Heinrich Locke, 1834. And it is Christ at Gethsemane, oil on canvas, right. Public collection. And it's entitled now, The Garden of Gethsemane. There is a rare condition called, now these are going to be a lot of medical names that I know nothing about. And I try to put them in syllables. There's a rare condition called hematidrosis that may occur in cases of extreme anxiety caused by fear. Fear is the source of all of our problems. And love is the antidote. And it's not loving everybody in the whole world. It's intelligent love. Also known as hemorrhagia percutum, it manifests as sweat that contains blood or blood pigments. And in my own words, you have to think, when this was happening after the Last Supper and the apostles were sleeping, God was sending him like a prophecy, what was going to happen the next day. And he absolutely couldn't believe. And he was seeing what he's going to have to go through. And the anxiety and the fear was like, oh no. And then Jesus finally gives in and says, not my will, but thy will be done. Wow. You know, for him, I mean, for Son of God, Son of Man, he had our human feelings. All right, now it's caused anxiety due to intense fear affects the autonomic nervous system. Fear triggers the amygdala, which is the brain's fear center. We know the reaction as the fight or flight response. The response results in the following: profuse sweating, diaphoresis, accelerated heart rate, vasoconstriction of blood vessels, increased blood pressure, diversion of blood from non-essential areas in order to increase blood perfusion to the brain and muscles of the arms and legs, skin pallor, his white skin turned even whiter, just from getting the premonition of what was going to happen, decreased function of the digestive system, which may result in vomiting and abdominal cramps. And when I thought, my dear God, how Jesus had the Last Supper, how they enjoyed it with each other, and then to go and have to vomit it because of what he was going to be put through, what he avoided for 3 years. But there's any example, spiritual or even human, it's amazing. Why Jesus' fight or flight response lasted several hours as he prayed alone with his apostles, slept nearby. He would have been completely exhausted. Now you could itemize this in the list, exhausted and dehydrated because of diaphoresis and vomiting. When the angel appeared to give him strength, and I have a picture, she's in white, and he's collapsed into her arms, he would have had a sudden and complete reverse reaction, resulting in, quote, severe dilation and rupture of the blood vessels into the sweat glands, causing hemorrhage into the ducts of the sweat glands, and the subsequent extrusion out onto the skin. Next topic is Jesus is scourged. The Jews then forced the white Roman to flagellation, or scourging, was one of the most feared of all punishments. It was a form of brutal, inhumane punishment, generally executed using the most dreaded instrument of the time, called a flagrum. The flagrum used in scourging was a whip consisting of three or more leather tails that had plumbati, which are small metal balls or sheep bones at each end of the tail. And I was also told that it was a sheep bone. It was sharp at the tip when they beat him. As indicated on the Shroud of Turin, the flagrum used on Jesus had dumbbell-shaped plumbati. So the Shroud of Turin, like I said, wasn't just his face. There were other imprints, and I'll have a picture of that later.
Yeah, especially
in
his
Mosaic,
hands and feet. Yeah.
What?
Especially his hands and feet. Because his hands and feet were bleeding too because of the nail wounds. But please continue.
Yes, very. In Mosaic law, scourging could not exceed 40 lashes. Do you remember reading about that in the Bible?
Oh, I don't
scourging.
Recall that, but that's probably true. 39 is
39.
Yeah, 40 less 1, 39. Yeah,
40 less 1. Okay, but often the number of lashes was dependent upon the cruelty of the executioners. Now, probably the Jews got them drunk, because just like in war or something, you get them drunk, they're more fierce. They don't drink. They're not taking drugs. The Muslims aren't taking drugs. So this is going to stop. This is it's going to end right here. If the executioners did not want the crucarius or victim to die too quickly, they limited the amount of lashes administered. The number of lashes also depended on the person and their crime. White Pilate, Pontius Pilate, Roman, he was the governor, ordered that white Jesus be scourged in an extreme manner, in an attempt to appease the Jewish mob. Mob, they weren't even people. Well, what would you call a bunch of hyenas or something? You know, violent animals.
A Jewish
Not
mob.
Even, what would you call them?
A Jewish mob. A
A
bunch of
mob, that's what
hyenas.
they
Yeah,
were.
right. Okay.
When the evil Jews were not satisfied and demanded the release of Barabbas, Pilate pronounced sentence. He tried, we talked about that in the other couple shows. He tried
Right.
everything possible. And that's how come even today, no matter who you're doing business with Jews, you can't win. Because they've got this down pat for 2,000 years. It worked for 1,000 years in Poland. Jesus would have been stripped naked and shackled by his wrist to a low column so that he would be in a bent over position. One or more soldiers would be assigned to deliver the blows from the flagrum. Standing beside the victim, he would strike in an arc-like fashion across the exposed back. Quote, the weight of the metal or bone objects at the ends of the leather thongs would carry them to the front of the body as well as to the back and arms. The shoulders, arms, and legs down to and including the calves. The bits of metal would dig deep into the flesh. Ouch! Ripping small blood vessels, nerves, muscles, and skin. The soldier would change position periodically and deliver blows from the opposite side. And the Jews would have known about this because the Romans did this to others. And it was on a hill where everybody could see in the whole area. So they knew about this, exactly how evil it was going to be. And their hatred. The soldier would change position periodically and deliver blows from the opposite side. And then there's a picture of Jesus. There's all kind of pictures, you know, like sometimes he's like down this way. This one shows him like hanging from two things up here. And then this way, they're getting the whole body from top to bottom. In fact, they wanted to do something similar to Paul when the Jews got Paul, you know, St. Paul in the when he was preaching. And then when they actually laid him down and put him like this and were going to beat him. I mean, and then he got out of it, you know, because he was a Roman citizen. But yeah, they were going to do the same thing. And they did end up murdering him, that Jewish woman, Drusilla. Here's a painting by William Adolphe Bergerot, Flagellation, Denoter, Senior Jesus Christ, 1880. And that's from La Rochelle, France. Now we're going to talk about the effects of scourging. The injuries sustained during scourging were extensive. Blows to the upper back, the rib area caused rib fractures, severe bruising in the lungs, bleeding into the chest cavity. Picture one of us are going through this. You know, yourself or a loved one or anybody, and any white person anyway, and partial or complete pneumothorax puncture wound to the lung, causing it to collapse. As much as 125 millimeters of blood could be lost. The victim would periodically vomit. Everything else, I can't take vomiting. I had vomiting when I was pregnant, morning sickness with both of my babies. And it is horrible. It's just kind of like natural to something. I don't know why some people get it and some don't, but you know, some women get it and some don't. But and then he'd have bouts of fainting, tremors, and seizures. Each excruciating strike would elicit shrieks of pain. Okay, Jews, I hope you're listening, you Jewish women, what you've done. The victim would be diaphoretic, profusely sweating and exhausted, his flesh mangled and ripped, and would crave water because of the loss of fluid from bleeding and diaphoresis. Steady loss of fluid would initiate hypovolemic shock, while a slow, steady accumulation of fluid in the injured lungs, pleural effusion, that's called, would make breathing difficult. Fractured ribs would make breathing painful, And the victim would only be able to take short, shallow breaths. The plumbuti at the end of the leather strips would lacerate the liver and maybe the spleen. White Jesus's condition after scourging was serious. The pain and brutality of the Jewish torture put him in early traumatic or injury shock. He was also in early hypovolemic shock because of pleural effusion, hematidrosis, hemorrhaging from his wounds, again, vomiting and diaphoresis, the crown of thorns. Dr. Michael Evanari, professor of botany at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, has opined that the Syrian Christ thorn, which was available in Jerusalem, was the plant most likely to be used for the crown of thorns. Other experts speculate that the Christ's thorn was used, although no one can be certain that it grew in Jerusalem at the time of Jesus. Both of these plants have sharp, closely spaced thorns and can be easily plaited into a cap. Now remember that. The crown was not a wreath, as it is typically believed. It was a cap of thorns. Like, in other words, you know, like a king or a queen wears a crown like this, and then it comes up with something. It was that kind of crown. So it's all in his brain and in his forehead and around his ears and everything, all the sensitive parts of bodies. The pattern of blood flow in the head area and the shroud, and subsequent experiments by Zugabe attest to this. Quote, "The shroud indicates areas of seepage and blood flow running down the forehead. The hair in the frontal image suggests marked," so he's looking at this impression on the, you know, what's coming out on the impression on this linen cloth, "marked saturation with dried blood, causing the hair to remain on both sides of the face." And then they have a picture of Jesus with the crown of thorns like this, looking up to God. I mean, anyways, Guido Reni, Esse Homo, this is the picture, oil on canvas, and it's a Pinacoteca, that's how you pronounce it, Nazionale, Italy. I sing in 8 languages, and I can't read, I mean, I can't talk them or speak them, but I do try to pronounce it. I think that's just a free gift we can give our Europeans. Like, hey, it isn't all about us Americans, but it should be. But it is about our fathers and mothers and our ancestors over there. Effects of the crown of thorns. Quote, "The nerve supply for pain perception to the head region is distributed by branches of 2 major nerves. The trigeminal nerve, which essentially supplies the front half of the head, and the greater occipital branch, which supplies the back half of the head. These 2 nerves innervate all areas of the head and face. The trigeminal nerve, also known as the 5th cranial nerve, runs through the face, eyes, nose, mouth, and jaws. Irritation of this nerve by the crown of thorns would have caused a conditional called trigeminal neuralgia or tic douloureux. This condition causes severe facial pain that may be triggered by just a light touch, swallowing, eating, talking, temperature changes, and exposure to wind. Stabbing pain radiates around the eyes, around the forehead, the upper lip, nose, cheek, side of the tongue, and the lower lip. Spasmodic episodes of stabbing, lacerating, and explosive pain are often more agonizing during times of fatigue or tension. It is said, listen to this, Pastor Eli, it is said to be the worst pain that anyone can experience. And I would just like to say something. This is actually very, really, really sad. But, you know, what happened to Jesus? And I'm so grateful I can be reading this and sharing this. But I know when I had my second baby at home and he was 10 pounds and I gained 80 pounds because the doctor says the bigger you are, the eat whatever you want, just eat and get a big baby. Right. But anyways, after about 6-7 hours of labor at home, the pain became really, really outrageous. It was agony. Women in Brazil are paying up to $85,000 to have babies cut, like you're cutting your heart out, or you're cutting your liver out, or you know what I mean. They don't want to go through this. And not only that, my baby was in the wrong position on my spine, and so that's where I was feeling everything. And I mean, I start screaming and a maniac. I was just, you just can't, your whole body is being, because it's your spine, everything, plus the weight and everything. And I said to the doctor, because the doctor was there, midwife was there, a Christian lady was there, my husband was there, my son was there, I'm there, and little baby in my stomach was there. And I said, where's the drugs? Where's the drugs? And I don't take any kind of pills or anything. And I'm going, you don't know how bad it is. I mean, this is nothing compared to what I'm reading here, but just to give you an example of, yeah, what agony is. And then finally I said, you know what, I called a Christian lady, I'm going to close the door and I'm just going to listen to some hymns. And then before you know it, it seemed like the baby fell into place instead of being along my spine. And the midwife comes to the door and she's knocking on the door. I locked the door. Well, you know why? It says in the Bible that a couple of Jesus's healings, he tells the people to get out. He just brings the mother and father in and closes, because all the other people were, a lot of them were paid, wailers and weepers and stuff like that. He knew the difference between real mourning and just people cheap, you know, paying somebody to do it. So he would close the door. And that's what I did. I locked the door. And then she's knocking and she goes, what happened? She says, the baby should have been born. And you were just like this much away from delivery. And then before you knew it, it was, I would say within 5 minutes, the baby came right out. But it was like when I talk about where it says here, it is said to be the worst pain that anyone can experience. Childbirth is the worst pain. It's called labor because it's work. You're working every part of your brain, your fingers, it's just like the whole thing is just going on. Anyway, to continue about Jesus, as the soldier struck white Jesus on his head, and his is capital, with reeds. Now, mind you, you've got these things puncturing in your head, and now they're going to hit you with reeds. He would have felt excruciating pains across his face and deep into his ears, much like sensations from a hot poker or electric shock. These pains would have been felt all the way to Calvary and while on the cross. As white Jesus walked and fell, as he was pushed and shoved, as he moved any part of his face, and as the slightest breeze touched his face, new waves of intense pain would have been triggered. The pain would have intensified his state of traumatic shock. The thorns would have cut into the large supply of blood vessels in the head area. Jesus would have bled profusely, contributing to increasing hypovolemic shock. He would have been growing increasingly weak and lightheaded as well. Again, he would have bouts of vomiting, shortness of breath, and unsteadiness as hypovolemic and traumatic shock intensified. The next topic is the cross and the nails, like you were saying, Pastor Eli. Okay. How could a humiliated, weakened, beaten, bleeding, mangled mess of a man already suffering from breathing difficulties as well as hypovolemic and traumatic shock carry a T-shaped cross that weighed between 170 and 200 pounds? The short answer is that he did not. The cross used in Roman crucifixions consisted of two parts. Quote, the upright or mortise, referred to as the stipes or staticulum, and the tenon or cross piece, which is called the patibulum or antenna. Historic information shows that the stipes were already in position at Calvary. So something was already in, probably in the ground, the stipes. White Jesus carried the cross piece, okay? At Calvary, he was nailed to the cross piece, which was then placed into a rectangular notch carved into the tip of the stipes. Did Jesus carry the cross piece over one shoulder or over both shoulders? Syndonologists, individuals who study the Shroud of Turin, interpret two images on the back of the shroud as evidence he carried the cross over both shoulders. So picture that yourself, as it was tied to his wrists. So now, I mean, what a position to be in. You're already walking, and now you're carrying it with your wrists and on your back. We know that Jesus fell at least three times on the way to Calvary. His condition was serious. Wouldn't you just have wanted to go there? And I remember from, you know, when I was Catholic, that there was a Saint Veronica that went to wipe his face or wipe the blood off his face as he was walking. And it says here, his condition was serious. Each time he fell, it would have been more difficult to get up. I don't know how he got up after one, to tell you the truth. The executioners needed to keep him alive until the crucifixion, and so made Simon of Cyrene help carry the cross piece. And Pastor Eli, as far as I know, Simon of Cyrene was not black. Wasn't he white? Wow. From a...
Of course he was.
Can you expound on that?
No, I don't know where anybody would get the idea that it was a black man. Blacks were not allowed into Palestine. There were no blacks there.
Really?
At all. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad, because I have seen where Simon Cyrene was black.
No, that's a fake image.
Yeah, they're always feel sorry for the blacks. It is so boring already. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, right.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Let's go on to get something exciting happening in our life and not violent. Now, here's a painting. This is really touching. Jesus is on the cross. He's looking down, and he died. And Mary, his mother, collapsed. She's actually laying flat. I mean, only a mother. She's laying there flat. She's like this. I'm surprised she didn't die with him. And then they're tending to her right now. And Jesus has the halo on his head. The painting is by Karl Heinrich Block, 1834. It's called The Crucifixion. And the next topic is called The Crucifixion. And this is kind of hard for me to talk about. I have two sons. As a form of capital punishment, and now they crucify our sons, not on crosses, but every day of every, all different kind of ways that they're attacking our men, our boys, and our women too. As a form of capital punishment, crucifixion was widespread prior to white Jesus' birth. But it was abolished by Emperor Constantine in 341 AD, but continued to be used by both Christians and non-Christians. Teams of well-trained Roman soldiers carried out the crucifixions. Each team consisted of the exactor mortis, or centurion, and four soldiers called the quaternio. Crucifixions were carried out in full view outside. So in other words, the crucifixions were carried out in full view outside the city walls of Jerusalem in a hilly region called Calvary or Golgotha. Quote, Roman crosses probably stood about 7 to 7.5 feet in height, because from a practical point of view, it was easier to lift the cross piece and victim into position on a shorter cross. It was also easier to remove the victim from a short cross after death. Shorter crosses made it easy. Now listen to this, Pastor Eli and my audience. Shorter crosses also made it easier for wild animals to finish off the victims. What on earth? Thank God for Joseph of Arimathea giving him his tomb. That's how Jews would have done away with our Jesus Christ.
Right. Fed him to the dogs.
Oh, my gosh. I've never had TV or all these movies or news or anything. So for me, this is. But for Jesus, I will do it for Jesus, not for myself. In many artists' interpretation, there is a suppedaneum or support placed under Jesus' feet, you know, where he's on the cross. Historically, they are not mentioned in the writings or depicted in illustrations of crucifixions in Jesus' time. So we're going to talk about the nails now. The nails used in crucifixion were made of iron. A typical nail used in Jesus' time measured 12.5 centimeters, I think that's 5 inches long, with a square shaft that measured 9 millimeters at the head of the nail, and tapered off to a 5 millimeter point. Question, what happened at Calvary? By the time Jesus arrived at Calvary, he was in exquisite pain, struggling to breathe and suffering from blood and fluid loss. One of the executioners threw him to the ground and then made him lie on his back. One other executioner pressed down on his chest. Another held him down by his legs, while a third soldier stretched his arm one at a time across the patibulum and nailed down his hands. The pain from the nails would have been like having hot pokers driven through his hands, causing bolts of radiating pain up his arm. He would have screamed out in agony. Quote, the process was repeated for the other hand, offering no relief from the agonizing pain. Think of this Easter, when everybody, all Easter has become is a bunny basket. You know, here's your Easter eggs and here's a bunny rabbit. There is no more Jesus. There's no more resurrection or crucifixion. It's the same thing with the Christmas. That's coming back a little bit, if our Jewish masters allow it. You know what I mean? The process was repeated for the other hand, offering no relief from the agonizing pain. Then, two members of the execution squad likely manned the ends of the cross piece, while a third member grasped Jesus around the waist, getting him to his feet. They backed him up to the upright onto a platform device, and then two men lifted him by the legs. Now, when it says legs, this is all pain for Jesus. From every single atom in his body is in some kind of torture, and inserted the cross piece into a mortise at the top of the upright. Then they bent his knees until his feet were flush to the cross. So in other words, like bend the knees so that they could lay flush, and nailed his feet to the upright. Again, Jesus would have likely screamed out in agony, and it was the Jews that did this. The Romans didn't want any part of it. They were forced into it. And these people didn't even know. It's like Fred Loyster, when the gas chamber expert, he did all the paperwork for them. And for every execution that's ever gone on, he didn't know who these people were. He was hired to do something. In fact, he wanted to lessen their pain. He came up with an invention. So were the nails driven through Jesus's palms or his wrists? In the book, A Doctor at Calvary, Dr. Pierre Barbette determines that, quote, the nails in the hands were driven into a natural space generally known as the destot space, which is situated between the two rows of the bones of the wrist. So here's your wrist, here's your bones. So it's probably like right here. Barbette claimed that Destot's space is in the wrist. Okay, I agree. However, Zugabe, who holds a PhD in human anatomy and teaches gross anatomy to medical students, observed that Barbette's diagram of the wrist and palmar surface of the hand contains mistakes. In addition, Barbette wrote that, quote, the trunk of the median nerve is always seriously injured by the nail. But Zugabe points out that the median nerve is not located in the area that Barbette mentions. Conducting a series of carefully designed experiments to live volunteers, I wouldn't want to volunteer for this, Zugabe determined that the nails were hammered through Jesus' palms in the thenar furrow. When the nail is hammered here, the exit wound on the other side of the hand matches the wound image on the Shroud of Turin. Okay. Stigmatics, including Francis of Assisi, and I remember reading and studying about these, Catherine of Siena, and especially Padre Pio, displayed wounds in the same spot. I think Padre Pio was because when he had, you know, they actually developed the blood, you know, coming out of their wounds, and you could get it. They just got it. I remember when I was a little girl, they were talking about it. So I'm pretty sure it was in my time when Padre Pio was having them. I don't know if they're there for good or if they just come and go, you know, like through the mind or whatever. Effects of nailing the hands. The median nerve runs through the thenar furrow where the nail was hammered. A nail through this area would have caused a burning, searing pain so severe that the slightest touch, movement, or a gentle breeze felt here is agonizing. They put him in agony. The Jews wanted it, and they were rejoicing, and they're still rejoicing today. They killed him through World War II, and Jesus Christ and Christianity is on the chopping block, but not their religion and not the Muslim religion, the other two main religions. This condition, known as, causalgia, intensifies with an increase in temperature. If the pain is not abated with strong narcotics, of which Jesus didn't have any, the sufferer goes into traumatic shock. In fact, they wanted to give Jesus a narcotic. It would have been some kind of like a wine or something like that, that the soldiers were drinking too. But he denied it the first time. He just turned his head away when they put that sponge on a spear. He turned his head away. But at the very point of death, it was so bad that he took it. It must have been really, the final end must have been, they don't have movies, these Jewish movies. If the pain, all right, raising and mounting the crosspiece to the top of the stipes would have triggered even greater pain and contributed to traumatic shock. Now, all this is done in like, from like maybe 9 o'clock at night to what, 3 o'clock in the afternoon the next day, right? When it,
no, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
9 a.m. to 3 right. p.m. Okay, 9 a.m. to
earlier,
3 p.m.
But yeah, no, they couldn't do that in the dark. Had to wait for sunrise. Okay.
Oh, sunrise, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now it says here, nailing the feet to the stipes. The Romans bent the legs of their victims at the knees and then placed their feet flush against the cross. Then they hammered one nail through the top of each foot, severing the plantar nerves. The pain would have been similar to the causalgia caused by the palm injuries. In addition, the effect of bending the knees to align the feet against the stipes would cause cramping and numbness in the calves and thighs. Picture going to a doctor with this list of all this stuff, all this holy long list, a satanic list that they put innocent Jesus or white Jesus. This would force white Jesus to arch his back in an attempt to straighten his legs and alleviate the cramping. Quote, what was the cause of death? The most notable theories about the cause of death are asphyxiation, heart attack, or rupture, or shock. Until Zugabe's book, there were no actual experiments to determine how Jesus died. Zugabe's volunteers were positioned as accurately as possible to a replica of the cross with a capital C, unanimously claimed they had no difficulty breathing during expiration and inspiration. His findings therefore ruled out asphyxiation as a cause. According to Zugabe, who is a previous director of cardiovascular research with the U.S. Veterans Administration, heart attack or rupture is an unlikely cause. And I just want to insert one thing here. March 29th is Vietnam Veterans Day, and I'd like to give Pastor Eli, a round of applause for serving our country and doing your duty, being obedient, and then picking up this cross that you're carrying. Right. But it is okay.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay. A heart attack or rupture is an unlikely cause. Unless Jesus had a pre-existing heart condition, heart is really in the middle, there is no mention of any prior illness in Scripture. Right. The pain and suffering of scourging would not cause a heart attack. Even in the unlikely event that he did have a heart attack because of chest trauma, the passing of at least one full day after the fact would be necessary for the heart muscle to soften and rupture. The most likely cause of death was traumatic and hypovolemic shock. This is supported by numerous experts on crucifixion, including Dr. William Edwards of the Mayo Clinic and Dr. P.F. Angelino and M. Abrada, writing in the journal, quote, Sindon, 1982. Question. How did blood and water flow from his side? I didn't know that water and blood did flow. That was one thing I didn't know. The chest wound markings on the shroud indicate that there was a pierced area in the upper right chamber of the heart, the right atrium. The heart chamber would have been filled with blood at the time of death. As well, Jesus would have put pleural effusion, which is fluid around the lungs, as a result of the brutal scourging. So you've got both of the pains. When the spear was pulled out with a quick, jerky motion, it would have, quote, carried out blood that had adhered to the blade and some of the pleural effusion from the pleural cavity, resulting in the phenomena of blood and water. After the spear was withdrawn, the lung would have collapsed, preventing any further seepage of watery fluid. There would not have been a great gush of blood or other fluids. Next, Jesus' burial. Rigor mortis is the state in which all the muscles of the body stiffen and shorten. This happens as a result of an irreversible chemical reaction. It begins to set in about 3 hours after death, starting in the jaw and other facial muscles and progressing down the rest of the body. Shroud evidence shows that the rigor of the body had to be forcibly broken in order to be properly wrapped. As per custom, the body was quickly washed. In the process, blood clots would have been dislodged. Any blood flow resulting from dislodging of the clots would have been considered unclean blood. In custom, unclean blood would not have been washed away. Now we're going to go into the Shroud of Turin. Controversy about the authenticity of the shroud has persisted through many centuries. Numerous repairs and restorations that added different fibers and improper handling have contributed to the question of its validity. Shroud scientists have requested additional advanced random carbon dating samples. Turin authorities continue to refuse further testing, possibly because they believe the cloth to be sacred. Pollen identification testing conducted on the Shroud in 1973 and 1978 determined that most of the 58 species of pollen on the Shroud are found in the Jerusalem area. There are also traces of pollen from the Syrian Christ thorn on the cloth. Even if the Shroud were traced to the 13th century, as some have claimed, is its century of origin, the question still remains of how images came to be. All attempts to duplicate the image have failed. To draw accurate conclusions, scientists would need to experiment with a similarly injured cadaver shortly after death and would need to duplicate the conditions preset within the tomb. And then there's two pictures here of the front and the back, long cloths. Conclusion. Speculation about how Jesus died continues to be of great interest. Numerous articles and books have been written on the subject. Many theories have been proposed and subsequently discarded. Even if the exact circumstances and cause of death are never determined, what is clear is that our Lord suffered tremendously for many hours and then died an ignominious, lonely, excruciating death. We must remember that he did this willingly, mercifully, in atonement for our sins. And out of unfathomable love for us, he wanted us to love one another. In any study of Jesus' crucifixion, that is the most important undisputed fact, and to love God paramount. Perfect timing. I didn't think I was going to get it in because I rehearsed it at and I went 10 minutes over, but we've got a few minutes. So I'd like to have your input now.
Well, I think the shroud has to be authentic. There's too many. The original idea that the cloth was the wrong kind and the pollen was the wrong kind, that has all been proven false. As you just mentioned, what, 58 different types of pollen, all from the Jerusalem area? So it can't be from the 13th century, from when the crowd was moved from Jerusalem to Italy, wherever it was, Turin, I guess, is in Italy. But there were a couple other places, too. But there was even a Jewish scientist who was part of the team. And after reviewing this evidence, the Jewish scientist concluded it has to be authentic. So even a Jewish scientist agrees. All right.
Good observation.
Proof. If a Jew says it's authentic, it's authentic. All right. Okay, Barbara. Good job. Yeah, so more on the Shroud next time?
No, this is the end of the Shroud. And then next week, I think, which is really like a miracle, you know, we didn't plan this. In other words, I would have been done about six, seven weeks ago. And then you gave us the list of passages from the Bible. And then it was just so interesting. And, you know, now we got that new Bible, you know, the New Living Translation. And it's like, it's so exciting. And one thing led to another. But next week is Holy Week and Easter. And that will be the end. That will be the crucifixion. It'll be the resurrection, and it'll be the ascension, and I'll get Bible passages on that. Yeah. I got it started already. So that'll be the last one about Jesus. And then we go on to saving the white people who are descendants. I don't care if they practice religion or atheists or whatever they are. We're descendants from Christian people, and it's on the chopping block right now. That's it's not true for the Muslims and the Jews. They're passing their bills called anti-Semite bills against us, 535-0, protecting themselves every year. They get one, and nobody, all 535 white descendants of Christians, like bobbleheads. Right. Something has happened to their minds.
Well,
we've
got to
pray
trying
for them. Just pray for them.
Oh, absolutely. Nobody's trying to replace Muslims. Nobody's trying to replace Jews or Orientals or Latinos.
Right.
Only the white race is being replaced, and it's obvious. Can't be debated.
Yes.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
All
and
right.
Thank you, audience.
Okay, Barbara. Take care.
Have a good
Bless everybody.
Week.
Bye-bye.